This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
I hated it, in the Thunder. But I also think a lot of people hate it because it was a Thunder.
Like, I have an appreciation, a deep appreciation for people that exploit the rules of the game and use them to their advantage for strategy purposes.
I mean, we were screaming during the season for the Grizzlies that they should have done it a couple of times.
Sure.
It's one of those things where when your team does it, you're like, brilliant. When it happens against you or if a team that you don't like uses it, you're like, F that.
I was going to be honest. I'm going to be very honest. I think the real explosion of that online
it's because of the Thunder. 100%. People hate the Thunder.
Also, we will carry Knicks Pacers later, game four, right here on 92.9 FM ESPN. And there's going to be somebody back in the crowd that we haven't seen in a while. After game two, Tyrese Halliburton said this. Tyrese Halliburton's dad, John Halliburton, is going to be allowed to attend home games in a suite starting tonight. He has missed 8 games after the altercation with Giannis in round one on April 29th. First of all, I think he wasted like the good celebration on the Bucks and Giannis. I mean, there's been a lot more to celebrate since then. But we talked about it the day that he was banned, Connor. There was easier ways to get around this than keeping him away from watching his son's playoff games. Just don't put him on the floor. I mean, this was dragged out way too much and made way bigger a deal than it needed to be. I hope he realizes he did wrong and never does anything like he did to Giannis ever again, John Halliburton. But at the same time, it was always kind of foolish to me to ban him altogether from playoff games. Seemed dumb. But he's going to be in a suite, like we suggested the day he was banned.
One game, I get.
Eight?
Series?
Damn,
come
man.
On now. That's insane.
That's a
he
lot.
He stood in front of Giannis and waved a flag in front of him. Like, let's relax.
Like, you're at this point where it's like, is your son ever going to get these opportunities again in his career?
Now, if they lose with him in the building,
yeah,
get your ass home.
Yeah.
Get back to that lazy boy, brother.
Yeah, for sure. All right. Well, hour number two is on the way. We'll open it with Jeff Calkins. He's on the other side. Make sure you stick. Jeff Calkins is a columnist of the Daily Memphian, also hosts the Jeff Calkins Show 9 to 11 every single weekday right here at 92.9 FM ESPN on X, Jeff_Calkins. Jeff, how was your Memorial Day weekend?
It was good. My Memorial Day weekend was good. I cooked ribs, which I don't really do. I've never really cooked ribs. And I did it in the oven, which I know is terrible. I know is the worst way to cook ribs. But my grill has gone kaput. And so I had to do it in the oven. But if you look up a YouTube these days, you can look up how to do anything. Yeah. Literally anything you want to do. Open heart surgery, I bet, is on YouTube. If you're like, how do you do open heart surgery? And you're like, okay, hold on. Hold still. I have to make this cut down the center. It's probably not that different than spatchcocking a bird, you know? And you can learn how to do that on YouTube. So I was consulting YouTube.
I'm not anti-ribs in the oven. They can be good out of the oven. They can be okay. I mean, they're better on a smoker, for sure.
They can't be smoky. They can't be smoky in an oven.
Well, no, I get it. Well, you can do some liquid smoke in the sauce if you want to. That's what you want to do. But how'd they turn out okay?
Yeah, I mean, here's the truth. If you cook meat a long time at a low temperature and then put sauce on it, it's going to be good, right? Like, is there any one of the controversies that I encountered on YouTube was, do you like your ribs to be, quote-unquote, fall off the bone, or do you like them to have a clean bite, is how it was described, which means you don't have to rip it off the bone, but you want to be able to lift up the rib and bite the rib and have the, you know, whatever. You want to have enough firmness and structure to the meat that, in fact, it gives you a clean bite rather than, oh, I'm just trying to pick it up and it comes falling off the bone. Where are you on the fall off the bone versus clean bite?
Oh, gosh.
Debate?
I mean, I don't know. I think both. Can I advocate for both?
It's all delicious.
I don't think fall off the bone is a negative thing. And a clean bite, I don't think that's a negative thing either. That means it's tender and you bit right through.
You can see it at some, though. Like, for example, take a rendezvous rib, right? That's a clean bite rib. It's not a fall off the bone rib. It's just not. I mean, I've had a lot of those, and I think it's more of a clean bite rib.
I don't have a take. I got to be honest.
You know what I mean?
I like ribs either way. I mean, do you have a strong take there?
I have no strong take. No. And then what else did I do of interest? I was just reading about my quarterback, Josh Allen, America's quarterback, really. and so he's getting married Saturday. Yeah.
Nice.
Okay, that's the idea. Deion Dawkins let it slip. Offensive lineman, and I think this is a faux pas by the offensive lineman. Josh was keeping it secret, and Deion Dawkins, he let slip that it was this Saturday, a little while ago. Now they're all trying to play coy, but he did not protect his quarterback. He is not, for the guy that, you know, he did not protect his quarterback. But anyway, so it is, he's getting married this weekend, and it's voluntary minicamp, and my quarterback, America's quarterback, is at voluntary minicamp the Tuesday before he's getting married. Would you be?
Yeah. I mean, preparations, so, right? I think by Thursday, you need to start your preparations for a Saturday wedding as a man.
As the groom?
As the groom. You know, the groom. let's be honest. Let's be honest about weddings, you know? The groom doesn't make the decisions. We just
you
get the suits ready for your groomsmen. You get the gift.
Josh has some,
and then you show up
too.
And you say what they tell you to say.
I think that's right. I think you absolutely go. Yeah. In fact, it's probably, you know.
Also, Deion Dawkins letting it slip. Like, did Josh Allen really think he could keep that whole thing a secret? He's marrying Haley Steinfeld.
That's the only TMZ obviously would have it at the end.
How in the world was he going to keep that secret the entire time?
TMZ would certainly, they're in the bushes already. I'm sure they're sticking out the bushes wherever it is already. So, but anyway, other than that, it was a rainy weekend and all is well.
Yeah. Also with the Bills, you have Joey Bosa hurt. I'm sure that concerns you a tad bit. And then James Cook not at OTAs because he wants a new contract.
Yeah, I didn't expect James Cook to be there, but I expect that he ultimately will, because he's not going to get paid if he doesn't. Like, in the end, I suspect he will show up. He did put his house on the market. The old put the house on the market.
Yeah.
So that one, the Bosa one, is more concerning to me, but the James Cook one isn't that concerning to me, because in the end, he's got to show up and play.
Well, he's got a brother that's advocating for him pretty heavily in Dallas. I mean, Dalvin at one point said $15 to $20 million a year. I don't think he's getting that. James Cook's a weird – it's going to be a weird case study to watch how the Bills handle this, just because he's not the Saquon Barkley, Jahmyr Gibbs, that type of category, but he's also not one of the worst backs. He's sort of – he's been in that middle category his entire career.
I mean, he has tweeted $15 million, and then he's doubled down on that, and he's just like, no team is going to pay him $15 million. And so I mean, you know, would the Bills pay him $12 million or $11 million or $10 million, maybe, you know, whatever, maybe they're just like, yeah, no, running back isn't that important. I actually think he is important, because except for Josh Allen, who do the Bills have who is among the six or seven best players at a position, right? And the answer is almost nobody. You know, like, you could argue
Deion Dawkins,
one of the tackles, Deion Dawkins or Spencer Brown. Like, it's an offensive line in total, but they don't have difference makers, like, anywhere. You know, anywhere they don't have difference makers. And James Cook is not Saquon Barkley, but the way he played last year, he is a top 5 to 7 guy at his position, and he is actually a difference maker. And so I think you can just plug in, you know, anyone and get the same results. So I do think they need him. But enough Bills talk.
Well, we're talking about millions. Yeah. We have millions to talk about in Memphis.
Yeah.
Didn't work out their way. And we'll talk about Jaren in a second. There's more millions to talk about. But
yeah, I was going to say, there's millions on all sorts of fronts.
P.J. Haggerty commits to Kansas State. Now, it was reported earlier in the process that Memphis had a $3 million deal on the table. Now, I have checked with multiple people behind the scenes, and I have gotten that confirmed. Again, there's only so much I can do to confirm it, but I have confirmed with multiple people in the know. $3 million was what was on the table for the University of Memphis. He commits to Kansas State, who struggled the past 2 years since making the Elite Eight. And the reported deal, this is reported, don't have the full insight, don't see, I don't have the contract in front of me, but $2 million base salary with $500,000 in incentives. When you look at how this figured itself out for PJ Haggerty, what is your reaction?
I mean, obviously he could have gotten more money. We know that, right? If we all believe what we believe, he could have gotten more money. And so from that perspective, what are you thinking, PJ Haggerty, right? And not only that, he left a coach and a team where he was a first-team All-American. I mean, not first-team, but he was an All-American, right? So so there you have a guy who's left more money and in a system that where he knows he fits and flourishes. And so you could say it was a mistake. What was he trying to get? Right. And I think this is what it breaks down to. He did it for two reasons. One, he thought he could get more money. So, right. So he's offered the $3 million and he thought, you know what? I can play this, right? I can get $4 million. That's one reason. And then he did it secondly, because he wanted to go to the NBA combine and he wanted to be told that he was going to be drafted. Right. He wanted it seemed pretty clear that he really would have enjoyed hearing from an NBA team. Yes, we'll spend a draft pick on you. And neither of those things happened. Are those reasonable things to have risked, $1 million over? That's the question. And I think not.
Right. Like
this isn't some tragedy that he's only going to be playing for $2 or $2.5 million.
Sure, right.
I weep no tears for PJ Haggerty. But this is where I do think that if he had had a deeply experienced agent.
Yes.
That agent could have said, okay, this is what's real. You can, if you want to go to the combine, go to the combine. If you want to explore other offers or you want to play in the Big 12 or whatever, that's all fine. But if you are hoping to get $4 million and if you are hoping to get an offer from an NBA team that we're going to draft you, those things aren't happening. So that's not a reason to do this. If you just really want to go to the combine or if you really want to go play somewhere else, those are reasons to do this. But he could have had an experienced agent who would have told him that these other two things, $4 million or an actual getting drafted, those aren't happening. So you should therefore think hard about taking the $3 million before it's gone. So I think that was the miscalculation on his part or the part of his people, but I don't think it's some grand tragedy for PJ Haggerty. It's too bad. It's too bad for Memphis. And I think it ultimately is a risk and too bad for PJ Haggerty. But, that's the universe.
I think this fits in with the Nico Iamaleava situation more than we originally thought. One, like you mentioned, experience agent. He was listening to his dad for the most part based on the reporting that we have heard. But also, I think both those guys hopped in the transfer portal with hopes to get more money, not a guarantee that they were going to get more money. And I don't understand that line of thinking. Why would you hop into an uncertain situation without a guarantee that you were going to make the money that you wanted to make? For Nico and for PJ.
You're not supposed to be able to feel about how much money you're going to make.
But you can give me a but there though, right? That happens constantly.
I don't think Nico wanted to be in the portal. I think he was shoved in the portal. He just wanted to be holding out from practice, right? That's what he wanted to be doing. I think the Nico situation is worse.
Yes.
For several reasons. One, he had a deal that he had agreed to that was supposed to extend into this next year. That's one reason. PJ didn't. PJ was, by all accounts, was a free agent, right? So in that perspective, it was less admirable behavior from Nico. Secondly, he literally held out of practice. Also,
right.
Scummier behavior, right? Like it just was. Like it's scummier behavior.
I'm not saying they're one for one. I'm saying there are similarities.
No, I know. And then the other thing that I think Nico is a more egregious situation is he very clearly traded a better situation for a worse, not just less money, but a better situation for a worse situation. Clearly, the conference isn't worse, but the status of that program in the conference is significantly worse. So I think Nico is very clearly a misjudgment on his part, and a pretty egregious one, honestly. I think PJ Hegarty, I'm with you. I made the same comparison. I think they're very similar. I think PJ's is a less egregious for all those reasons. And you can make an argument. Yes, K-State wasn't in the tournament last year. They had a transfer in the portal who was in the portal last year who was a complete disaster, ended up in tears because it was such a bad situation. And who knows? Like, we know that it worked with under Penny, and he's leaving Penny, the guy who made him an All-American. So you can tell me that it's a worse situation. It's a better conference. Like, it, you know, he could have heard at the combine, we'd love to see you go up against better opponents. You know, I don't imagine, I'm not saying he heard that, but at least there it's arguable that the situation is at K-State is different, but not necessarily a dramatic step down from Memphis's, whereas Nico's clearly was. But I agree, they both, you know, they both got stars in their eyes or dollar signs in their eyes, or their people got dollar signs in their eyes. Well, let's be clear, their fathers got dollar signs in the and led them both astray. I think that's clearly right. And I don't think either one, I mean, Nico very clearly will not be held in high regard by Tennessee fans into the future. I think PJ, people are grateful for what he did. But if you compare him to other one-year guys who had great seasons, if you compare him to Kendrick or to Derrick Rose, he's not going to be remembered as fondly for all kinds of reasons. But one reason is those guys didn't leave Memphis to go somewhere else ultimately. And PJ could very well have come back here, and he chose to leave Memphis and go somewhere else. And so I think for that reason, although people will be grateful for what he did this year, he's not going to remember with warm and fuzzy feelings in Memphis.
Yeah, I agree with you wholeheartedly. And I don't know if you saw our former colleague Mark Giannotto put out a tweet sort of talking about PJ Hegarty. He said, in 25 years, do you think these guys who go to four schools in 4 years that don't really have the NBA draft status that you would want to ultimately be a contract player and make a difference, like, do you think they'll regret it by the time we get, you know, 20 to 25 years down the line? Right now, no, if they're making more money. But it's not how it used to be. I mean, a millionth example of that.
I would think that it would be meaningful to players to build a legacy somewhere, to have connections to a place, right? I mean, in the same way that I don't know, like, I still in touch with my college roommates. Like, it means to me. Like, you know, it shouldn't. Human connection and building a leg, all that should mean something, I would think. You know, if in the end he takes his $2.5 million and invests it well and whatever else, I don't know how much he's going to. But I do think it's unfortunate this bouncing around because I do. I mean, look at your college experience. Isn't the best part of your college experience the relationships you made?
100%. Met my wife.
and here you go. Like, here we have a guy who's just, you know, whatever.
Yeah, but you know, the question they would ask is what the question they would ask is, you know, what's the price tag on the human connection you get for staying for multiple years?
But here's the thing. That's true. But as we just pointed out, he literally would have made more money to stay at the place where he could have built a legacy and had deeper connections.
Correct.
So, but I mean, then again, PJ Hegarty was jumping before, you know, he was jumping to high school. You know, like, I do find the whole thing unfortunate. He just feels like it was a total mercenary. On the other hand, he was the most important player towards a season that righted that Penny Hardaway era.
100%.
And so that is something to be grateful for.
Yep. 100%. All right. Now, Jaren Jackson Jr., he was second left off of the All-NBA teams, didn't make third team, second team, first team. We understand all of that. We learned that before Memorial Day weekend. It does call into question maybe the leverage or the certainty around him staying in Memphis for a certain dollar amount. It makes it a little bit more of a conversation. He could sign, but I think in all likelihood it could be, you know, the situation where he waits it out, gets the free agency, and the Grizzlies have to make an offer. How do you feel about Jaren Jackson Jr.'s contract situation now that he has been left off of the All-NBA teams and that five-year, $345 million deal is no longer?
I think this could go either direction. I think the Grizzlies pretty clearly would like to still get him committed and extend him by renegotiating his contract, which can only be done, you know, once we get to July. Renegotiating the last year of his contract and extending off of that, I suspect that would be the preference of the Grizzlies just for the certainty. Who wants to go through the year of wondering what's going to happen with Jaren Jackson at the end of the year, right? Year could go badly. Who knows? Like, so of course I think they would like to get it done. In terms of Jaren, unlike PJ Haggerty, I'm not trying to argue that he shouldn't sign the deal. There's a lot of reasons not to sign the deal right now. A, if he's all NBA next year, he would still be eligible for the Supermax and he'd get a lot more money. Even if he isn't all NBA next year, he can get a fifth year as opposed to this year when he can only get a fourth year on his extension and therefore get more money. If he renegotiates and extends off of this deal, it can't be bigger than the deal he could get at the end of next year. So unless the only reasons for Jaren to sign are if he just wants to get it over with and he's committed and he doesn't want to go through the year, whatever, that would be one. But the biggest reason is just the threat of injury, right? He could, what happened to Brandon Clark or to Jason Tatum, whatever, could happen to him. Right. I mean, he's a guy who runs up and down basketball courts. And so it could happen to him in November or something. And then you're like, what the hell? Why didn't I take this giant pile of money that was in front of me? The thing is, though, he's already made a giant pile of money. If this were his first big deal, I think players are very quick to say, I'm going to lock it in because I want to make sure that no matter what happens to me, I'm just going to have a whole lot of money. He did that, and he took a deal that wasn't actually that in the end turned out to be pretty much of a bargain deal for the Grizzlies. But Jaren wanted the security, wanted to get it done. Now I think there's a real argument for Jaren to wait. And if he does, it's going to cause great anxiety among the Grizz faithful. But it doesn't necessarily mean that he's walking at the end of the year because no one will be able to offer more than the Grizzlies at the end of this season. So I think it sets up for maybe a anxiety-ridden year from Grizzlies fans, but I don't think this would be irrational for Jaren if he wants to wait.
Yeah, he has the luxury of waiting. I don't think there's any doubt about that. For the Grizzlies, I guess they kind of have it, but not like he does. He's sitting on that pile of money, and he's got some leverage. I'm curious how it figures itself out, though. I was hoping, weirdly enough, I know some people look at that five-year, $345 million deal as just like, oh, do you really want to give that to Jaren? I was hoping he would get that so we'd get it out of the way. So you have some certainty about the core and what you're going to have on the team.
I think that would be the better scenario. And now I'm hoping that they can reach an agreement and that he wants to just get it over with and he'll sign this deal and that would be great. They'll have to do some things to offload some money, but that would strike me as who wants to go through this year with, oh my God, free agency possibly looming. And all of a sudden you can start to think about, it'd be kind of fun to be in this other, like, you don't want that, right? You know,
right.
So yes, I would like the certainty of having him committed, but.
And also Tomas Sisalo did not exactly maximize him down the stretch.
Well, that's the other thing. He became, right. He became less relied on under the new coach. So here's the thing though, like, even if he decides to take the pile of money, it doesn't – in this NBA, it doesn't commit you forever, right? Because in the end, if you take the giant pile of money and in a year and a half you decide to want to be somewhere else, you just say, trade me. And that's what. And then they have to – in the NBA, the rule seems to be if someone asks for a trade, you have to trade them. So it actually doesn't commit him long haul to a franchise – that he apparently really likes and wants to be a part of, but that can change. And if it does change, he can always ask out. So you could take the money and still have the flexibility of knowing that, because that's the way the NBA works, you can leave whenever you decide you want to leave.
Mm-hmm. For sure. All right. Well, Jeff, I'll let you roll. We'll talk again on Thursday.
Yep. See you again.
Yes, sir. He is Jeff Calkins at Jeff_Calkins on X. Daily Memphian columnist, also hosts the Jeff Calkins Show 9 to 11 every single weekday right here at 92.9 FM ESPN. Glad he could carve out some time. Now, we need to talk about SEC spring meetings because SEC Commissioner Greg Sankey is shooting from the hip and letting other conferences around the country know that he is here to battle. We'll talk about it next. We have SEC spring meetings going on right now.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Now, an SEC Commissioner Greg Sankey is shooting from the hip. He is tired of the narratives around college football, and namely from the ACC and the Big 12 regarding the vote last week of the college football playoff with the 12 team going to straight seeding. We know that the ACC and the Big 12 both put out press releases talking about good of the game and what they think's in the best interest for college football. And Greg Sankey shot back when reporters asked him about their press releases. This is what he had to say. I don't need lectures from others about good of the game. I don't lecture others about good of the game. And coordinating press releases about good of the game, again, you can issue a press statement, but I'm actually looking for ideas to move us forward. That's the end of the quote. Now, Greg Sankey does a really good job with the SEC, and I don't want to lose sight of that. What he's done for the basketball product, you look at baseball right now, they set a record for teams in the regionals and making the tournament. We know that football, they've been at the top of that peak for most of the 21st century. Like, I have respect for what Greg Sankey has done for the SEC. But every time he gets an opportunity to speak on what he thinks best for, is best for the game of college football moving forward, I just see this consistent pouring out from him of disingenuous thought and disingenuous sort of ideology, where he acts as if the decisions he's made on behalf of the SEC have helped college football going forward. Let's just sort of review what has happened in the SEC as of late. They signed a massive TV contract once they got Texas and Oklahoma and poached them from the Big 12. The Big 12 had to fight and scrap like hell to bring in more conference members. They stole from the Pac-12 to be able to do so, to get at least a TV contract in a similar ballpark. And it's not even really in the similar ballpark. It's about half. Also, when we look at sort of Greg Sankey's history when it comes to, you know, lifting up other programs, scheduling out-of-conference games with other really good teams, maybe in the Group of Five or elsewhere, he's not done a good job of making his teams do that. Yeah, they do schedule some good out-of-conference opponents, but at the same time, how often do we get that Week 10 game where Alabama's facing off against Samford? We get it every year from every SEC team. So for him to sit up there and try and talk to the media as if he is the one that has the ideas to move college football forward seems ridiculous to me. It seems he wants to warp the game of college football to favor his conference and, quite frankly, no other conference. He talked today how the SEC is not committed to any particular format about the playoff. He liked the four team, 12 teams, whatever. He likes straight seating, but he also, in that same breath, said that the current college football playoff format, the one issue he has is, he says, it's clear that not losing is more important than playing quality opponents. Now, when he says that, Connor, I'll give you one guess who he is talking about from within his conference that he thinks that applies to. Go ahead, take the guess.
Alabama?
He thinks it's Alabama. Alabama went 9-3 last year. They lost two games to Vandy and to Oklahoma. Had they not lost one of those games, they would have been in the college football playoff. Now, when he says also it's clear that not losing is more important than playing quality opponents, well, let me take you into a little background on the first 12-team college football playoff. You know the champion of the college football playoff, the national champion last year? They lost two games, including one at home against a non-ranked opponent. But either way, if you're talking about Alabama, let's operate by using Alabama. Sure, they had a good schedule. Sure, they had some good marquee wins to hang their hat on, but they also had marquee losses. Vanderbilt was 6-6 last year. They lost to Georgia State in the out-of-conference. You lost to that team on the road if you're Alabama. Also, let's go ahead and look at Oklahoma. Oklahoma was 6-6 last year, and they lost in a bowl game at the end of the year and really got dominated on both sides of the football by the Naval Academy. So, in the end of the day, for him to act as if it's clear that not losing is more important than playing quality opponents, you have to beat the teams you're expected to beat for your quality of schedule to matter. It's that simple. And to act as if you don't understand that, to act as if Alabama was done wrong, is insane. I can take you to an example from two seasons ago where one of his teams ended up in the four-team college football playoff over an undefeated Florida State team. They didn't lose a game. Yet one of your teams got in over them because they had a quarterback issue. So for him to stand up there and act as disingenuous as he is acting right now is so unbelievably off-putting, and it makes it very clear what his intentions are going forward. His intentions are to keep strengthening the SEC, and there's no bounds to that. He doesn't care about the culture of college football. He doesn't care about all of the different things we have done over the years to make college football great and the regional rivalries and all that. He doesn't care about that. What he cares about is the bottom line for his conference, the Southeastern Conference. It is that simple. Now, I'm not speaking out of both sides of my mouth, but I'm going to mention something. We know that the SEC and the Big Ten carry all the weight and all the leverage in college football. Tony Petitti and the Big Ten get a massive pass where Greg Sankey doesn't. And I know why that is the case. Greg Sankey speaks on these things. Tony Petitti doesn't. And when you talk to the Big Ten, they always have these messages. You know, they have PR professionals behind the scenes who always message differently. I personally think the Big Ten avoids a lot of the flack that the SEC ultimately gets because Greg Sankey opens his mouth and speaks the way he does. Tony Petitti and the Big Ten, they are a wolf in sheep's clothing. When they took all of those Pac-12 teams and brought them over to the Big Ten to effectively kill the Pac-12, what was their messaging behind that? Well, you know, the Pac-12 was about to go away. We were saving these schools from a terrible, terrible situation. We were saving them, right? And they have poached more schools than any other conference in America. So I understand where people will say, why is no one going after the Big Ten? I get that. And I think that the Big Ten deserves more flack. But Greg Sankey, while the Big Ten tries to protect themselves from those things, through their PR team and otherwise, Greg Sankey gets up there and tells you exactly how he feels and makes it very clear his intentions going forward. It's frustrating. We've been talking about it for years, though, Connor.
It's really frustrating, and I don't think this is good for college football, and I think it bothers me that he keeps trying to frame it that he's doing what's best for college football. No, you're doing what's best for your bottom line.
Yes.
It's all about cash. It's all about cash. That's the only reason you'd make these decisions. I will also say, Greg Sankey how did it become possible that the SEC has the insane schedule that it does? Oh, maybe it's because you helped create mega conferences and you brought the best schools from other conferences to the SEC. You created the problem that you're complaining about.
Yep.
It's not good for college football if it's only SEC and only the big conference. Like, that's not good for college football.
Yeah, and I say
that's not what college football is about. It is about everybody having a shot. The college football playoff wasn't perfect last year. We've been over why it wasn't perfect. There are tweaks that need to be made. The seeding is much better now that they've made that decision. But Alabama did not deserve to be in the college football playoff last year. You lost to Vanderbilt, and you lost to a 6-6 Oklahoma. I don't want to hear it.
Yep. And then he tries to use arguments that are so clearly flawed. It's clear that not losing is more important than playing quality opponents. Then why did Florida State get left out 2 years ago? I mean, it's nasty. It's nasty business. And I will say this, based on what he has said, he has created a lot of enemies in the college football world, whether it be higher-ups at these other conferences or fans. But one thing that always frustrates me about when Greg Sankey says things like this, too many SEC cronies out there, man, too many people that will just take him at his word and consistently back him up when he says things like this. That's for everything that Greg Sankey has to say, there will be 15 people that cover SEC teams or are part of SEC media that back him up on what he has to say when they know so obviously his arguments are flawed and they know so obviously where he wants this thing ultimately to head, and that's Big Ten, SEC running things, everybody else, you're a second-class citizen.
When I saw the quotes today, the only thing I could think of is we're all looking for the guy who did this. It's you.
Right. Ugh. Nasty. Antoni Petitti. Nasty.
Yes.
But, hey, we'll get more before the week's over. SEC spring meeting's rolling right along. All right, small talk is on the way. We have some WNBA to get into. And small talk is brought to you by Conway Services, reputable service available 7 days a week. First of all, Caitlin Clark has a quad injury. She's going to be out for 2 weeks, a minimum of 2 weeks. If I am the Indiana Fever, though, I see how this team responds without her. And then if it has to go beyond 2 weeks to get that quad ready, do that. Make sure she's at full strength when she comes back. And this isn't going to be a reoccurring theme. But I also saw before the injury, did you see how much money she is projected to produce this year for the WNBA?
I did see that.
$875 million and upwards of $1 billion is what they're expecting from merchandise sales, from ticket sales, and the Caitlin Clark effect. It was that way last year, and they expect it to be bigger this year. Now, the 2 weeks is about, what, four games for the WNBA schedule? I think it's four games. They only play 44, though. So four games could be a pretty substantial swing without Caitlin Clark, so we'll see how the Fever do without that. But I want to get to this because it does implicate the Indiana Fever. Game one, we know the Indiana Fever beat the Chicago Sky in Indiana on May 17th. And there was the investigation after the game looking into racist comments. And
this episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Guy really didn't hear anything in the arena, but they looked at social media to start this investigation. WNBA has concluded their investigation. They said, "We have investigated the report of racist fan behavior in the vicinity of the court during May 17, 2025 Sky vs. Fever game. Based on information gathered to date, including from relevant fans, team, and arena staff, as well as audio and video review of the game, we have not substantiated it. The WNBA is committed to fostering a safe and inclusive environment for everyone and will continue to be vigilant in enforcing our fan code of conduct." So nothing happened. Right? I mean, that's what I should take from that statement?
Yeah.
Not a single thing happened. You can't cry wolf like that. You just can't do it after a bad loss like that. Just does not make your product or your team look serious. If you're the Chicago Sky or the WNBA. They have to investigate things that are serious. This clearly was not serious. But hour number three is on the way, and opening it, per normal, every single Tuesday, is Christian Fowler. Make sure you stick around.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average, and auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.